Good evening, listeners. This is John Campbell introducing Miracle Hour on bbsradio.com. Welcome to our listeners all over the world. And tonight, we've got a wonderful, wherever you are, tonight, today, midday, wherever you are, an amazing guest that I'm really pleased to have with us today. Her name is Dr. Manjeea Samantha Lawton, and to her friends and people who know her well, she's just known as Dr. Munchie or Munchie, and she's quite an amazing woman, and it's a real thrill to have her on tonight and to introduce a new book she's written called Punk Science, Inside the Mind of God. And those of you who are familiar with Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief, this is what he had to say about Munchie. He said, "Wow, punk science is an extraordinary journey from the microcosm of the atom to the macrocosm of the universe and all stops in between. Manjeea Samantha Lawton's synthesis of cosmology and consciousness is sheer genius. It is elegant, simple, and as an added bonus, makes great reading." So, I can vouch for Munchie being an amazing person. I met her about, I don't know, 4 years ago, and I knew she was from lots of different planets. So welcome on the show, Munchie. It's great to have you here. Hey, Munchie. Are you there? Oh. Just a little technical hitch there, folks, but I'm sure Don will have it all fixed out in very short time. I met Munchie at a conference which I spoke at about 3 or 4 years ago, the Children of the New World conference, you know, about these new children, sometimes called Indigo Kids and Crystal Kids, Rainbow Kids. And we just kind of clicked immediately, and I saw who she was, and when I started to hear her story, it was quite amazing. So I'm looking forward. Is that you, Munchie?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, wow, well, that's great. So I was just telling our listeners there a little bit about how I got to know you. Tell me, did you hear my introduction? What happened there? Did you go off to another planet for just a second?
I got cut off somehow, but yeah, you were introducing us. You were saying how we got introduced, yeah?
Yeah, I just actually told our listeners about Bruce Lipton, and I read the
fantastic endorsement. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's not unlike you to go off to other planets pretty quickly. But can you remember exactly? We met. It was about the conference, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was organizing a conference to do with indigo children. And a mutual friend of ours, based in Brighton in the UK, mentioned your name and that you were interested in the subject. So that's how we met, and she was a speaker for that conference. In fact,
that's it. Now I remember. I remember contacting you because I'd just spoken at Toastmasters about the Indigo Kids, and that had prompted me, the response I got to come to you. So that was how we met, and it was an instant kind of, we knew each other. So tell me, what I'd really like to hear you share with our listeners tonight is, tell them first of all a little bit about your background, because you were a medical doctor, weren't you? A practicing medical doctor in the British National Health System.
Yes, that's right. I trained as a conventional doctor in the British National Health System, the NHS. I went to a medical school in London called the Royal Free Hospital. And actually, whilst I was there, I did have a spiritual awakening experience. So I actually went through the whole of medical school with an awareness, a different sort of awareness, which just kept growing alongside my medical studies. So I qualified as a doctor, then went on to become a GP, what's known in the UK as a general practitioner or family doctor. And I also became a holistic doctor at the Bristol Cancer Help Centre, which is a very well-known non-profit cancer centre here in the UK. And I also trained as a healer alongside all of this. So, Yeah.
So you kind of had a leg in both camps for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's been an interesting journey, and you know, that's how it all began. Really, being at the coalface, as we say, and you know, actually seeing you know, the need for more holism in people's lives on a day-to-day basis. I was very much a witness to that, at the sharp end, you know, doing things like accident and emergency, or ER medicine, as you say in the States, you know, obstetrics, gynecology, pediatrics. I did the whole lot, and, you know, really saw that, the system, I think there's something you'd agree with, John, that, the systems that we're currently living with just aren't adequate for the sort of changes people are going through right now, let alone the future, just right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree, and it's not even limited to the medical system. It's all the systems,
yeah,
whereby, you know, children, especially these new aware children, are involved as well, and people's consciousness is changing. Munchie, you said that you had a spiritual awakening even right at the beginning of medical school. Would it be something you could share with our listeners? I mean,
That was really interesting because before that, I was a total skeptic to do with anything spiritual. I was quite a rational, scientific person, even as a teenager. And so it was a surprise to me that I just went to a yoga class. A friend recommended it at university, just signing up for all of these things as you do when you first get to college. And so the friend dropped out, and I turned up, and it turned out to be a Kundalini awakening class. And Kundalini is something that comes from yoga, which is about a spiritual awakening, energy awakening in your body. And some of your listeners will be aware of this and have heard of it. But it was a sudden awakening in this yoga class. It was 1 minute I was very much skeptical, and the next minute I was having an experience of being one with everything.
Wow.
So you can imagine that was quite unexpected and, you know, an amazing experience to have.
Absolutely. And, what sort of age were you then at this time?
I was only 18.
Oh, my God, so we're still in your teenage years.
And
I mean, some of our listeners maybe wouldn't be familiar with Kundalini. A lot of them will, obviously. But how did it affect you within the yoga club? I mean, what did you freak out? Did your body start to shake? Or what happened?
Well, you know, those are a lot of effects that I've since found out could have happened. But really, for me, it was totally effortless. I did I just recited some words, I'm forgetting the name of these now, but, you know, and, you know, put my hand on various chakras, and basically, it just happened. I suddenly felt the rush of energy go to my crown, which was explained to me might happen. And, you know, I just felt a total connection. And with me, it was very effortless, and it was, I had a feeling for the first time in my life that this was meant to be. This is something actually deeply familiar, not from my rational, intellectual mind, which was very active until then, but from a very much a deeper sense of self. And I got a sense of continuity between this life and other lives. And you have to remember, I was totally skeptical about all this. So to experience that was, all of a sudden, it was very new. But I felt absolutely fine with it.
It
got me in touch with a very much deeper sense of myself and connection to the universe.
Right, so up until that point, would it be fair to say you didn't have any sort of belief in a power greater than yourself or anything like that? What was your concept of the universe or infinite or God? Or did you have anything at all then? Because, I mean, your origins are from India, aren't they? So was there any kind of, what was your religious affiliation up to that point? Hello? Munchie, are you there? Well, folks, it looks, it sounds as though we're having a few technical hitches again, I'm afraid, but... Yeah, sometimes we have these technical glitches, and I'm always interested and intrigued as to what I was talking about or what my guest was talking about at the moment they happen. That's always an interesting thing, just to observe, you know, and see if there's any connection there. So I think we were just talking about Munchie's spiritual experience there and her connection before that time. And while Don calls her back... Yeah, she's an amazing woman, and I think she's going to talk to us later about some of the challenges she found, you know, trying to keep her work separate, and she did. One of the things I really admired about her was she kept, stayed in total integrity in her work within the National Health System. She at no time brought any of her other work into her practice as a doctor, and that takes a lot of doing, I think. But she'll tell us about that. Are you back there yet, Munchie?
Yes, I'm back.
Oh, well, well. Good. So, anyway, so did you have any affiliation to any kind of religious background before that time?
Absolutely not. I was very much into... the only affiliation I had was science. You know, my beliefs weren't unlike those of people like Richard Dawkins, you know, the scientist who's written the best-selling book, The God Delusion. Have you heard of him?
What's that? What was the name of the book again?
The God Delusion.
Oh, I think I saw that. Yeah, I saw that out on display there, and I thought, no, I'll leave that one.
Yes. Yeah, that's the sort of attitude I had before then.
Right.
You can imagine the sort of difference.
Oh, absolutely. Your origins are from India, aren't they? That's correct, is that right?
Sorry?
Your origin is from India, is that right?
My parents are from India. I was born in the UK.
You're born in the UK. So, I mean, okay, but so you're from the Indian heritage. And was there,
that's right.
So you've got... Genetically, I guess a lot of that wonderful Eastern mystical stuff running there. But what was their background? You know, I mean, do they come from a Hindu or?
My parents are Hindus, and and so I was essentially raised with a Hindu background. But you know, my parents are also both doctors.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, again, the sort of religion of science was,
yeah.
As you can call it a religion, if you know what I mean, the philosophy of science was quite foremost in the household. But
yeah.
My father did teach me, you know, he did read the scriptures to me and teach me some of the Hindu philosophy. So it was a very good background to set me up for later on, and I don't know how much of you heard of the Kundalini experience that I had.
No, we heard all of that. I think you went off when I was asking you about your religious affiliation, you know.
Oh, right, okay. Well, it was a good sort of background to when I did have that experience.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? So, really, at a young age, you had some seeds of a different type of, theory, if you like, given to you by your dad, which is fantastic. Because it is fascinating, I find, anyway, how what I see now is we've almost got, you know, East meeting West in philosophies and everything. There's a merging of everything, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And, as you said, I'm very lucky to have had that, had that going on.
That's wonderful. So then so you had this awakening, and then how did that develop? Tell us a little bit about that, if you could.
Well, I think even at 18, I went on a path of seeking, which I think a lot of listeners can relate to, where I tried to get my hands on as many books as possible to learn about spiritual matters and,
I love that. So tell us some of the books. I loved tracking other people's where their paths took them. I know which ones I read. Tell us some of the books.
One book that really helped me along the way, Living Magically by Jill Edwards. I don't know if you've heard of that, Marion Williamson. That was one of the very early books that I read.
Titles of hers, Munchie?
Sorry?
Any particular titles of Marion Williamson?
Yeah, Woman's Worth. And Clarissa Pinkola Estes. She did Women Who Run With Wolves. They were really early, books that I just absolutely lapped up. And then I wanted, because I was still in the medical profession, I started to seek out other doctors and scientists as well quite early on who also bridged science and spirit.
Right.
So that came quite early on for me. And I had that need because I was surrounded by doctors continuously, and I needed to feel that I wasn't alone as a doctor, in the medical profession, having this knowledge about chakras and energy, that there were other people like me. So Christiane Northrup, Deepak Chopra, all of these people were very important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, because, of course, Deepak Chopra also was a traditional medical doctor before he moved into what he does now, wasn't he?
Absolutely. And Christiane Northrup as well. She is specialized in women's health and has written a very important book on women's health, women's bodies, women's wisdom, which was very influential to me because she spoke about the chakras and wisdom, really, which you don't really get to hear about much in the medical profession. That was very good. Candace Pert.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard of Candace Pert, Molecules of Emotion.
Molecules of Emotion, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big wake-up call in my life because Candace Pert's book was the book that brought me right back to science, to make me really realize that science itself could explain a lot of things in spirituality.
Yeah.
So, having gone down the exploration route of, the esoterics and the spiritual side, I brought it right back to, well, what explains both? What encapsulates both? And she really did that for me. She's a woman. I've actually since met her. She's got this amazing presence and wisdom. She's a woman that's very comfortable with herself, very powerful. So she embodies that sort of cellular wisdom that she talks about. And, she also has this great genuine scientific knowledge, which really was a revolution to me that somebody could just hold all that together.
Right. So you developed your interest, and I mean, I think so many of us can relate to that, can't we? That once we get a taste of this stuff, it's like, oh, don't want to get more, It becomes like a drug in itself, but especially if, I was like you, I was totally shut down to anything like that,
Right.
And then once I got a taste of it, I just couldn't get enough, and I just read, and then started to go to workshops and people I'd never even heard of, So when you did that, presumably, I would imagine, just like in my case, it became more and more difficult to be in the traditional work that I had done. Did it start to become more challenging for you? Because I was telling the viewers, the listeners, television already. I was telling our listeners about how I really admire the fact that I know that you kept totally in integrity, and all the time you were working within the medical traditional national health system, you kept everything you did totally in alignment with that, and you didn't bring any of your other ideas into that. But presumably that got more and more difficult, did it? And you had to sort of make a decision.
It got harder in me as a person, not harder to do my job. I made that decision quite early on. that I wasn't going to mix the two. I was going to just immerse myself completely in the system as it was. And I did qualify as a bioenergy practitioner, but I kept that as a separate thing. In myself, it was difficult because I think a lot of people can relate to this, that, you know, you're in something and your soul is screaming out saying, no, this is not me, this is not my creativity. And so in that aspect, absolutely, it just got harder because it wasn't really my true expression. I could feel that there was something more to me that needed to come out, really. So, yes, it did get harder, but I didn't feel, for me, that the right thing was to integrate holistic therapies into my medical practice. I did keep those separate.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So what happened then? Eventually, did you resign from the traditional medical field and just start going in your other practices?
Well, I think things became clearer and clearer gradually over time that the medical profession was going to be too restrictive, and I would have to do things that were just not in keeping with my integrity. Like, you know, for example, you know, I don't want to get into a political conversation, but prescribing things like Ritalin to children was very difficult for me.
Yeah, oh, I can imagine that. I mean, that is one of the things that really saddens a lot of us, is the amount of young children being drugged and heavily drugged when we know that actually, there's not actually anything wrong with them. They're just coming from different dimensions of reality. I think that's the way to put it. And, of course, we know Solera.
Exactly.
She's Solera does
exactly.
A lot of work.
Exactly. And being in surgery and, you know, in general practice, what I have, all this knowledge, knowing that what I know about children and that there are alternatives, you know, it makes it hard to prescribe something like that to a four-year-old who's standing in front of you that you can see, and with my senses I could actually feel has psychic abilities, because I've developed psychic awareness myself, so I could actually communicate on a different level with these children. I wouldn't say things or do things that were out of keeping with my job, but I was picking things up, you know, about what these children were really about. So it was very hard to stay in that profession, and really the interest was taking over with me that what my true calling is, which is to bring the science and the spirituality together. That was really getting stronger. So over a period of time, I was working as a part-time GP at the Bristol Cancer Help Centre, and as a healer. I had my own bioenergy practice, and I was also starting to do talks and to write. And over time, I started to realize that what my true calling was, which was to, do the science and spirituality, bring those together, and which has led to the book, really, which has led to Punk Science.
Wow. And so when did you actually start the book? When did you start writing Punk Science?
You could say as early as 10 or 12 years ago, I started to look at consciousness and new physics and the physics of consciousness and all of these things. I started to read people like Jack Sarfati and David Bohm and all these wonderful physicists. And, really, that really sparked my interest. And so I started to make notes, which, you know, John, looking back, I know you're in the process of writing as well. Looking back, my notes from 10, 12 years ago, they're not that different from what has ended up in the book, quite amazing. So I kept that vision for so long. But I was doing house jobs, which is, the same as sort of internships in the U.S., so my hours were, I was doing 90 hours a week. So I really didn't have time to write at that point. I was very, very busy. I was continuously on a bleep. But you know what I did?
No.
I actually kept papers, physics papers, in my white coat pocket on call with me.
Wow.
So I would keep the faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that I wouldn't lose track of where I was really headed, I would actually have that. So if ever I got a moment, which wasn't very often, yeah, I would be able to just look at that, and that would keep me strong and keep me focused on what it was all about for me, you know, that I was going to do that. So really the past to the book has actually been, you know, quite a few years. At that point, I had no idea that things were going to change, like, in this field, like What the Bleep and The Secret and all these films were going to come out, and people were going to start to speak about things like quantum physics and spirituality more widely. I had no idea. It was just something that I knew was right in myself. And I knew needed to be done. I knew that this needed to be brought to a wider audience.
Yeah.
So I just kept going. And so really the book was, you know, really written in earnest from about 2002 to, and I finished it in, you know, end of 2005.
And it was published 2006.
And it came out in October 2006.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. It's an amazing achievement, and the dedication that you've shown. Like I said, because it is tough, you know, when you're against so much coming from another direction, you know, so much opposition,
yeah,
if you like. I think that's the difficult thing. But it's interesting, you know, you're saying about how it's getting to a wider audience. The things that I'm seeing and reading, it's quite incredible. I just read a piece, as you know, I'm a football fan, or soccer fan, as they call it in the States.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just reading now the number of football clubs over here in England who have brought yoga teachers in and are teaching yoga. It's quite incredible. You know, I mean, that, to me, that's the start of taking it into what has been a traditionally, you know, very, you know, macho, male-orientated, not much joining of the male and female in that industry up to now. But it's getting into all sorts of areas. It's an exciting time to live.
Well,
so,
you know, John, I've actually spoken at a football club in the UK.
Really?
I've actually done a talk in a football club.
Oh, my God. You mean to the medical staff or to the play staff?
It was actually, sorry, I don't know. That's my dog
going
on
the background.
Sorry?
The dog needs feeding.
They just got very excited there. It must be the soccer. But, that was partly to the staff, but it was part of a charity day that I was involved with, that I gave my time for a charity called Give Youth a Hand, and it was held at Peterborough Football Club.
Oh, Peterborough?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. Was that recently, or...?
That was a couple of years ago, yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, the lady that organized that, she's just making amazing inroads in this sort of area of spirituality with the football club there. So, you're absolutely right. Things are happening in most unexpected places.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, you know, I was not really not interested in any type of science at school, and I'm sure it had something to do with the way it was taught and perhaps the attitude of the teachers, because that's going way back. I mean, I was literally 3% physics and 4% chemistry, I think, so that was the level of my science achievement. So it is sometimes, when I start to read scientific material, it can get difficult. But the thing I've noticed about your book, and I haven't yet read it cover to cover, but I've dipped in, and what I've really been thrilled with is it's really easy to understand. And, I mean, I've never even heard of quantum physics, you know, 3-4 years ago. You know, I didn't know what it was. And interestingly, talking to one of the teachers at one of the children's school, a science teacher, you know, I mentioned quantum physics, and there wasn't much of a recognition of that. But can you explain to us what, because I think yours is a little bit a different step from the quantum physics that we understand generally, isn't it? Is there another sort of dimension you brought to it?
In the book, Punk Science, which you've just been mentioning, I started out actually just looking at bringing things like quantum physics and, you know, the cutting edge of physics to an audience in a really accessible way. So that's really great that you said that, you know, you find it easy to read, and a lot of people have told me that, and that's exactly what I wanted to achieve. But in writing the book, I knew that there was something a lot more that was coming. It was just like at the tip of my mind, you know, when you just can't, you know, just bring everything together. I was looking at another branch of physics called cosmology, and I don't know if you know this, John. I'm not a physicist, so really, I didn't know this either. I've just been sort of looking myself in certain journals and things like that. I didn't get a physics degree or anything like that, so I have to bring it down to a simple level for myself. And I've been looking at the changes in cosmology and looking at the cosmology and black holes and supernovae and things like that. It's something that really excites me, like how does the universe work at a big scale? So I'd been looking at that, and I could see that a lot of that work and the work of people like William Tiller, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's you know, a great scientist who brings together consciousness and physics, you know, and a lot of other people's work could all be brought together somehow, and it felt as if there was something coming, and that's when I had the big vision, and that's what actually takes the book way beyond quantum physics level to a whole new paradigm, which is something, John, that I wasn't expecting to do at all. It completely took me by surprise. Do you want me to talk a bit about that, or?
Well, yeah, I'd like to talk about that, and also because, you know, I'm sure we've got lots of listeners who maybe not even fully understand what we mean by quantum physics. Can you? Mm. I mean, I know what I've never studied it or anything, but my understanding is that it's the basic sort of concept is that, you know, by looking at something, we change the thing that we're looking at, the particles that are affected by the observer. Would that be a very, very, very basic way of explaining it? Or could
you
explain
it? Yeah, that's really the big revolution that quantum physics brought. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So if you could say a little bit about that, then and the way you move past that would be fantastic.
Okay. Well, I think, John, you said one of the main the main findings of quantum physics. I think before quantum physics came along, we thought that we were quite separate from our universe, that we could do an experiment and we had nothing to do with it. We were just observers. And what quantum physics brought is that, as you say, when you, the way that you look at a particle affects the way it behaves. And affects what it is, you know, whether or not it behaves as a wave or behaves as a particle. And I think that brought a new participatory universe where we're actually not observers anymore, but we're actually participating in our reality. And that's an idea that's it's been with us for a long time. You know, quantum physics has been around for 80 years now. It's coming
this
up.
This is what Einstein was bringing, wasn't it?
Sorry?
This was what the awarenesses that Einstein brought, is that right? Einstein
definitely did contribute to quantum physics, but the real sort of revolution that occurred, Einstein wasn't really that sure about it. He famously said, God does not play dice with the universe, in one of his letters. The main protagonists, really, I suppose you could say, are Niels Bohr and people like Werner Heisenberg and people like that. They really took quantum physics, you know, they're the famous people in the area. Einstein was sort of a bit left out in the cold at that point, which some people sort of don't realize. The Copenhagen interpretation, all these things were that was a big era in physics at the time. And I think since then we've had lots and lots of you know, years where we've actually studied this very well. Physicists have studied it very well. They've seen that the universe does indeed behave in this kind of spooky way, where particles are connected no matter how far apart they are. That's another effect of quantum physics. That, you know, all of our microchips, you know, everything that we use in our modern society, they is quantum effects. You know, so it's so successful. Quantum physics is so successful. We use it in our everyday technology. So we've had plenty of years to get used to this. And what's so interesting now is the word is leaking out to the general public through films like The Secret and What the Bleep. What the Bleep Do We Know is a full title. Many of you, the listeners, will have heard of that. And how the... we actually now participate in our universe. What I did in punk science is to take this to a new level and really create a new framework. And that framework actually incorporates quantum physics. It incorporates relativity. But it's something that is honestly, John, when I got this vision, I spent a lot of time saying, why me? Because it is something that is so huge. And, you know, I did spend a lot of time going, well, I'm just a medical doctor. I'm not a physicist. How am I supposed to do this? But, you know, gradually I realized that this is such a big picture that, you know, I really had to bring it to the world. And, you know, I got so much help. I know I can say here that I got so much help. From it felt like the universe itself was just guiding me to the right people, the right places, the right scientific papers to make this happen.
Right.
And
right.
You know how that is, yeah, when that all comes together like that.
Yeah, what we call it in the flow, in common terminology, you know, where everything just slots in and there's no resistance. Is that what you mean, or...?
That's exactly what happened. You know, I really was led to this. So, I don't know. I think a lot of your listeners maybe are aware of channeling or spirit guides or
sure.
things like that.
Yeah, I think.
Well, you know, one time I was asking sort of why me, you know, why have I got this vision? And I actually got a message from Einstein himself.
Right.
And he said, can I say that? To spirit, can I say that on the show?
Oh, absolutely! Oh my goodness me! Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, you know how it's received is not our business, is it, Munchie?
Yeah, and he actually said so. I was asking. He said because you were a physician first, and you know why it is needed. You know, so that was a really amazing message that I got through.
Yeah.
And it just is, you know, it's a multidimensional process, you know.
Yeah.
Messages like that don't get in the book because not everybody is going to understand that.
No, no, no.
But,
no, but
you know,
yeah, no,
the process
of
handling, the actual science behind that why that happens, is in the book. The scientific basis of channeling, of mediumship, you know, all of that is in the book, using modern physics to explain things like channeling. So this is a process that using all of my, you know, spiritual capabilities, psychic abilities, and my scientific academic abilities, they all came together in order to realize this new level, this new model of the universe. So, you know, I could chat to you a little bit about that if you'd like.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it just, what is so radical about punk science, which is why it's called punk science, because it is this radical new picture of the universe, and why it takes quantum physics on to the next level, is that it's actually totally bringing a new picture of how the universe works. And I don't know if you've heard of something, John, called black holes. Have you...
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of it. Yeah, I've heard about the black hole and the Big Bang and all that stuff, but don't really know a lot about it, but go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of people have seen sort of science fiction films and things like that, and they know that black holes are something that suck things in and they never you know, the heroes never will come out again if they ever get sucked in. Have you heard of that sort of concept?
And yeah. Was there something in this, in The Matrix, in the movie? Was there some kind of little bit of alluding to this in The Matrix?
Oh, was there? I don't remember that bit. I mean, it's that sort of idea that, things are getting sucked in and nothing can escape a black hole and light can't come out. What I realized in that moment where everything came together, I was sort of sitting, walking in the woods and sitting on a branch of an oak tree, actually, and I realized that it's actually totally the reverse. I was looking at all the data sort of came together, and I realized that black holes are not destructive. They're actually creative. And what's happening in a black hole is that at the center of a black hole is what is known as a singularity. Now, that is the normal name for what's at the center of a black hole. We can just call it infinity. Okay. Are you with me?
Yeah, go ahead.
And that's the infinite light, the sort of mind of God, as it were. So that's what it has a cheeky title, Inside the Mind of God.
Right.
So at the center of every black hole is infinity. That's what connects all of us, you know, to each other. And, you know, what happens in a black hole from this infinite light is the light spirals out from the center. And while it's doing that, it's in higher dimensions, and it's actually moving so fast, this light, and so vibrating so brightly that our normal consciousness can't see it. You know, our everyday consciousness can't see it. When we actually see it is when we're in meditation. That's the sort of time that we see this brilliant light. A lot of people meditate, and they say they see this very, very bright light. Yeah,
right.
So, yeah, have you heard anybody say stuff like that?
Yeah. And can I ask you, can I come in there and ask you, as you're talking and explaining that, you know, and I hadn't got an idea of black holes and that, but that was so well explained, would that sort of equate in our everyday living to when we get into what we think are really dark situations and, you know, depressed and blackness and everything seems to be going wrong, would that be reflect then maybe that that's the point, you know, some call it the dark night of the soul, where suddenly we connect with, you know, the light, or is that any connection, or am I totally off the beam track?
There is a connection, but I think you're still thinking in terms of black holes being dark and black. Actually, what they are super bright. So they look dark to us because we can't see them with our three-dimensional consciousness. Actually, they're extremely bright. And what we see coming out of them is, and this is what we actually pick up from our telescopes, you know that black holes aren't supposed to have anything coming out. You know, we actually see that particles coming out at the speed of light. Okay,
wow.
So what's happening is, when the light is too bright, as in beyond the speed of light, it's spiraling out of the black hole. It gets to the speed of light boundary, which is the edge of our world. You know, we think nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Well, no, there are other dimensions where things go faster than the speed of light. And that's not wacky physics. It's actually bona fide physics that this can happen. And it comes to the edge, and then it actually ejects all the particles and all the creative things that make our world. And what's more, you know, everything has this pattern, from our chakras to our atoms to our lives. So, John, your question, you know, is this when we get up into a sort of funk and we're kind of, you know, down and everything? It's related to that, but in a different way. So what's happening to us all the time, actually, we are constantly creating from infinity. Every single aspect of us is infinite. This pattern goes throughout the universe as a fractal system. The same pattern happens at every single level. So no matter if it's a galactic black hole out in the center of the of Andromeda, or if it's a chakra, or if it's our DNA, or if it's an atom, it all shows the same pattern, which is light coming from infinity, spiraling through the dimensions until it reaches our dimensions, and then it creates what's in our world. And that is the big turnaround. And in my book, I explain how this incorporates quantum physics, how this incorporates relativity, and all of those things that we know from our regular physics. This is really the next step up. This is the next big paradigm.
Right.
And, you know, there are ways in which we can absolutely, like you're saying, relate it to our emotions. So how is it that we can understand our emotions better? It all relates. So, absolutely, because everything in that black hole, everything in that light is consciousness. It's all the mind of God, everything.
Right.
So our consciousness, emotions are absolutely related to this whole process.
It's very big, John. And now, because you know I've got this reputation of disturbing the comfortable and comforting the disturbed, so I'm going to maybe disturb the comfortable. See, I'm going to ask a question.
There's no two ways about it, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
I mean, I'm not going to profess to understand the scientific thing, but I always relate. I just bring it back to, because I'm a very simple man, you know, very sentimental, as they say, not much sense and very mental. But what I was going to ask is, because as you know, I am a really dedicated student of the Course in Miracles, hence the name of the show, really. And I love the principles. And when I found the Course in Miracles, for me anyway, because as you know, when you first knew me, I was the perennial seeker. I was seeking, you know. And when I found the Course in Miracles, I found something for me which explained everything very simply, you know, that none of this is real, and the only thing that's real is God or spirit, or, you know, however you want to term it, which, you know, so in a way I can see there's a connection there. But how would you explain to somebody like me who's a student of that philosophy, and that's my spiritual work, if you like, how would you explain that the Course would say, well, all of this that we see, or we think we see, this is all an illusion, and the only thing that's real is the mind of God, is spirit, you know? And
yeah.
So there is a connection. That's what I feel anyway, is what you're saying and what the Course is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And please feel free to say what you think.
It's saying exactly the same thing, that, you know, at the center of everything is the mind of God. It is all one, and you know, from our atom to our DNA, it all shows the same process. So, you know what's so amazing? That the center of your atom, the center of your chakra, and the center of my chakras, and the center of the galaxy, the center is actually all the same. It's all the infinite. That's what connects us all. You know, so this is a sort of connecting principle behind it all. And you know what's so great about the black hole principle? It gives you, which is what this process is, it gives you a mechanism for how the illusion comes about as well.
Ah.
It doesn't just say all is an illusion, because, you know, when you, I'm sure the Course has lots to say about this as well. I'm not as familiar with it as you know, as you are. But, you know, the illusion that we're living in is also important, because this is where we learn a lot of stuff. We go through a lot of emotional things, and this really, really helps us, you know, helps our spiritual growth throughout lifetimes. So, you know, the illusion, yes, it is an illusion, but how does that illusion come about? And the black hole principle gives you your cake and eat it. You can have the illusion, and you have the mechanism behind the illusion, and you're also totally connected with the infinite. You know, and it gives you the mechanism by how this can happen.
Yeah.
You know, so the two can be, you know, not only married, they can actually complement and help each other.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's fantastic because I love it that you know, and I'm always keeping open to new ideas and what have you. I think what I see the connection, the big commonality that I see is that it's coming from a place that we're all one. We're all one, and I think that's the big thing, isn't it? And taking it for a way of living our lives. When we really, really remember that we're all one, and I certainly forget many times, you know, but it makes us far more than careful about what we think, even.
Mm.
Not only what we do to others, but what we think and the thoughts we have about others, you know. So the thoughts
separate us,
or better or worse or what have you. And I think that's anything that brings people to that understanding so that they become more conscious and more careful about their thoughts, and that no, there is no such thing as an idle thought. I think that's the thing that really hit home to me. And would that be in line with what you're teaching?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, with this principle that I'm talking about, it wouldn't be the next stage. Personally thinking, it actually can't exist unless it incorporates thought and consciousness. And that's what we really need in science now. We can't go on without this sort of dialogue, without incorporating consciousness into the universe. We've come to the end of the line in science. You know, John, we've got a lot of technology coming out, but we haven't actually got any big leaps in science. And I think, you know, this is absolutely the heart of it. You know, we're all one, so the center of the black hole connects us all, and it's all consciousness, you know. So everything that I've talked about, the whole process, it's the light of consciousness coming from the infinite to what we know as the finite, or as you say, the illusion. It's like the mind of God playing a very complex game with itself, pretending to throw on a cloak for a few lifetimes, you know, to see what that's like. And, you know, while you're in the illusion, you learn lots of games, but absolutely, I hope this is just gonna, you know, to show the physics and the hard science behind all this. It's gonna help people and remind people, that of this deep connection with not only each other, but also the universe, with the planets, you know, to realize that the same principle happens in them that it does in the stars. You know, that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Munchie, that was a fantastic explanation, and it's been wonderful. We're just coming up to the end of our show, and we've got about 30 seconds left, and we go automatically into music. So I just want to thank you, first of all, for giving us your time this evening, for telling us about your new book, Punk Science. And our listeners can go onto your website, which is www.punkscience.com. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yep. And see a lot more about you. And we look forward to hearing you on the circuit, because I know you're going over to the States. And every good wish, and it's lovely to hear from you. And I certainly look forward to coming up and visiting with you very, very soon. And thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Enjoyed it. Thank you, Munchie.
All right. Lots of love.
Lots of love to you. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.